with the Osram, O-S-R-A-M, company, but had not yet decided to accept it. In further conversation, he told me that a new camera, which he had just acquired, had been confiscated by the Americans, and asked if I would use my good offices to recover it for him. It was common practice of our army, on entering a German town, to confiscate all weapons and cameras, and after selecting any that they wanted for themselves, to run a tank over a pile of the unwanted material. I agreed to intercede and request the commanding captain if to return the camera to Bonhoeffer. The captain agreed, and I went my way. And now recall hearing later that the camera had been returned. New paragraph. Years later, I read that Bishop Bonhoeffer had been kept in prison in Berlin, where his brother had known him to be, without execution until it was necessary for the Nazis to evacuate their prisoners to get them, to keep them from falling into the hands of the approaching Russians. And Bishop Bonhoeffer, with a few other prisoners, had been trucked out of Berlin. And when the going had become difficult, had been shot at the convenience of his jailers. I never heard any other mention of the other brother. We learned that certain Gestapo papers of possible importance had been concealed in burial urns and buried at a certain spot in the forest, in the Harz. We followed excellent directions. Three of us followed excellent directions to the spot, dug where, at the point indicated in the forest, which had been indicated in the forest, and found the urns. There were only a few of them, but they contained interesting Gestapo estimates of prominent government research men. Many of these men had been on our list to investigate, and many of them, and some of them had already been found and interrogated. To my surprise, the Gestapo estimates were very accurate evaluations of the abilities of each man. Good scientists were labeled good scientists, whatever their feelings toward the Nazis may have been, and poor scientists, some of them high up in Nazi research circles, were labeled as deficient in scientific ability, though loyal Nazis. Along with the burial urns, which we took away with us, was buried a small rocket or aerial bomb about 2 feet long. We did not know exactly. It was obviously ready for use, but we did not know how it should be used. Handled it with care and took it away with us. Took it away with the burial urns.
Bigger, and you really have no choice. And it appeared to me that the president was awfully hard on these people, and these are the very people who are responsible for the big Reagan victories in the last session. He would not have gotten his tax cut, his 3-year tax cut, through without the skillful work of the Finance Committee Chairman Robert Dole. And I don't think there's a soul up here who would say that Senator Howard Baker wasn't the unsung hero in getting the Reagan economic program through and keeping the focus on that through the entire session. It just seemed to me that he was extremely hard on these doubters.
Phil, Federal Reserve Chairman Paul Volcker was on the Hill today, was he not, warning the economic leaders up there that if the budget deficits didn't come down, that interest rates wouldn't be going down anytime soon, and he said that just today.
He did, and one thing of interest also, Senator Armstrong of Colorado, a Republican conservative, said after hearing all the briefings today on what the president was going to be addressing in his State of the Union address, was talking about deficits of much more than $100 billion. And it was Senator Armstrong's line that if these deficits are that huge, that the people on Wall Street and Main Street are just not going to buy it. And I think that there are very few people up here who really believe that the deficit is going to remain below $100 billion. They expect it to go higher and higher.
And if that happens, interest rates will go higher and higher. We'll be back in just a moment with our analysis, commentary, and reaction to the State of the Union. Right now, this message.
And I promise, Mommy, I'll take care of him myself. He won't grow much, and I'll take him for walks, and I'll feed him.
Puppies go with kids, but smells go with puppies. That's why you really need Lysol disinfectant spray.
And I'll teach him not to bark.
Lysol eliminates pet smells in the air, kills household germs on surfaces and bacteria that cause odors. So you can have the puppy.
I'll eat all my broccoli and I'll put him
without the puppy smells. Pets, another reason you really need Lysol spray.
Announcing a new gravy train flavor. And here's Mommy.
And here's new beef liver bacon.
Hey, Yoshi, they've got two gravy train meals.
A lot like homemade. See, just adding warm water makes a beef liver bacon flavor meal in its own meat gravy. What more could Josie want?
Gaines Gravy Train Dog Food. Now there are two gravy meals with homemade appeal.
Now, continuing our analysis, commentary, and reaction to the President's State of the Union Address and the Democrats' presentation on the same night as the State of the Union. Bob Schieffer, I gather you don't think the stock market is going to react well to the President's State of the Union Address, that interest rates are not going to drop certainly in the next 30 to 60 days as a result of it. Housing costs, unemployment, I'm looking for some reaction, some positive reaction that you expect from the State of the Union.
Well, I just don't see, Dan, how that you can expect interest rates to come down when you have a $100 billion deficit. After, money is a commodity, like shoes or anything else. When the federal government has to borrow money to pay on its debt, it has to go in and get a large chunk of that commodity called money. That doesn't leave very much money for other people to borrow. It's just like shoes. When you don't have very much money there to borrow, the price of the money goes up. When you have a lot of money, the price of the money goes down. And so unless the Federal Reserve decides to increase the money supply, which of course just runs up inflation, there's no way, unless I guess you go into a deep depression, that you cannot have high interest rates. And the President said tonight at a background briefing at the White House today, they were taking some pride in the fact that the deficit would be less than $100 billion. Now, they didn't say what it would be more than. We never could get a parameter. They said less than $100 billion. Well, that's a record deficit.
But in fairness to the President, he did have a theme tonight. It was no quick fixes. Now, you may not agree with it, but it's old-time Republican religion that we are going to hurt in the short term, but in the long run, there's going to be the millennia. And to his credit, he is sticking with what he said. Now, it may be pulling the house down with him in the short run. But, you know, I think the President then came out ahead of the Democrats tonight. First of all, that to pick up on a phrase you used this afternoon when you and I were having a cup of coffee, that half hour was a 30-minute version of a 30-second commercial.
Exactly.
And it may have been too slick, because it's full of some contradictions. There was first of all, it was narrated by an off-camera, impersonal voice. Nobody speaks for the Democratic Party today. So there was a woman there talking about oil companies and big companies getting breaks from the Republicans, but the Democratic-controlled House and the Ways and Means last year went beyond Reagan's proposals for tax breaks for industry and companies. The Democrats are proud of pointing to the fact that more people are concerned today about unemployment in the polls the Democrats took. But a year ago, the Democrats' polls show that people were more concerned about inflation than anything else. And Reagan has brought other things, have brought inflation down. The real bear that he's trying to wrestle with is that defense spending. As he talked tonight, I thought of 1966 and Lyndon Johnson's decision to go for big defense spending and no tax increase. And that brought everything down. The economy, the great society, and Lyndon Johnson himself. And Ronald Reagan is making the same mistake of believing that he can go for these big defense increases without a tax increase, and in the short run, that old-time Republican religion isn't going to make any converts.
Well, this is what George Bush called during the campaign, quote, voodoo economics.
And he
said you can do all of this at the same time.
He said, that's right. Ronald Reagan said you could raise defense spending, you could cut taxes, and you could balance the budget all at the same time. And George Bush said that's voodoo economics. It just won't work. Well, so far, George Bush is right. Now, Ronald Reagan is saying tonight, if you just hang on with me, I'm going to be right in the long run.
Leslie Stahl, how much advice did the President have to override inside the White House among his own close advisors to raise taxes? I mean, we were given the impression, at least, that any number of his own advisors says, listen, you ought to at least raise the excise taxes somewhat, and that he took a look at that, maybe wavered in the direction of doing it, but in the final analysis says, no, I'm not going to raise taxes.
The pressure on him, as I understand it, was enormous. And in fact, Dan, and I find this fascinating, this whole federalism project, as it was presented tonight, grew out of the staff's and his advisors' desire to convince him to raise taxes. They wanted him to increase excise taxes as a way of getting the deficit down. He didn't want to, so they came up with this plan that they knew he'd like, of returning some of the federal government's functions back to the states. Then they told him the only way to do that is to give the states some revenues to fund it. The only way to do that is to raise excise taxes. So they sold it to him within the context of this federalism package. He then agreed to it. We were told, our sources told us, that he did okay the tax increases in the context of the federalism project, and then went up to Camp David, thought about it some more, had some conversations with Jack Kemp and some members of the Chamber of Commerce, and said, I just can't raise the taxes, but I like the federalism project, so let's stick with that. So everything that he did tonight grew out of the staff's and his advisors' strong urgings and pressurings to raise taxes. They do feel, I think many of them, most of them, everyone here actually, that getting that deficit down should be his primary objective in his economic program, and he clearly doesn't agree.
Phil Jones on Capitol Hill. I know a number of the Republicans there, and some of the Democrats, the so-called boll-weevils, said a year ago that they were going, when it comes to the president's economic program, that they'd stick with Ronald Reagan, the hell freezes over, and then help him try to chop through the ice. Now, if the president continues to keep the posture he did tonight, saying, look, I'm not going to change, I'm going to stick with it, can he hold that necessary support behind him in Congress, the combination of the Republicans and, in the case of the House at least, the so-called boll-weevils?
Well, I don't know for sure, but my hunch is no. I think that at this point, these members, the Republicans, are looking at the November election and deciding that they're going to have to start looking out for themselves. And I just don't see how in the world he is going to be able to hold them in line unless the economy starts going better, because as long as that deficit looms as bigger and bigger, these people are scared to death, because they are convinced. Ronald Reagan may not have talked about it tonight in his State of the Union address about a balanced budget, but these folks have spent 6 weeks, much of it back home, talking to people, and their constituents are still true believers that one of the biggest solutions to our economic problems right now is balancing the budget. And this program, as we see it outlined tonight, is just not aimed in that particular direction. The other problem, Dan, that I see quickly in hearing the president here tonight, and I would say that it is the major difference between this year and last year. There is no vehicle to get this program through. Last year, we had reconciliation. Everybody learned what reconciliation was all about, and it was a process where the president could keep all of his program in a package, and it worked. But there is no package, no vehicle that can be used this time. And if you look back over all of the major issues that go through Congress, once they start getting separated, they get lost. And that's, I would think, going to be a big problem here, that this thing is going to turn into bits and pieces that he will get through. And his program doesn't work with bits and pieces. He has to have it in its entirety.
Phil, both of you, I'm wondering, you're talking about in this federalism program, you're talking about 40 programs that the federal government administers. Does anybody know yet how the president plans to submit this to the Congress? Obviously, it won't all go at once, and obviously the legislation isn't even written yet. But isn't that going to overload the circuits of the Congress when you're talking about economic problems and things like that, to start holding hearings and putting on the agenda how to get rid of 40... 40-